Welcome to Building Sustainability Podcast with me, your host, Jeffrey Hart, aka Jeffrey the Natural Builder. Every fortnight, join me as I talk to designers, builders, makers, dreamers and doers, exploring the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. Welcome to this episode 68, which is the second part of a two-part episode with Ben Kerslake, talking about insulation and condensation. If you haven't heard the first part, head to episode 67 first. Otherwise, this won't make much sense. Enjoy the episode. What do you think of insulating plasters?
I started making my own, actually, just with perlite in the lime. And I do quite like them because, I mean, any insulation is going to take on moisture. And even when you look at the foam insulations like Celotex, for example, they say you need to store them in a dry place. If they're outside, they need to be covered. Even they say they're completely impervious to moisture, but it's because they will absorb moisture, and we know that I see a lot of spray foam, which is basically a similar thing, sprayed foam to fill gaps around fit windows, and it doesn't take long before it starts breaking down, especially when it's in the presence of moisture. So these materials can take on moisture, and it affects their U value massively, which is why I've always thought they've got Celotex put into modern buildings inside the cavity that is designed to be wet. It's designed to condensate, and water runs down the external leaf of the wall into a tray or out of weep holes. It needs to be able to escape. So that whole cavity is always designed to be wet. And you've got insulation in there that kind of degrades in the presence of moisture, really. And it's not just the fact that it can take on moisture, but it's also the fact that all those little gas-filled holes, pockets, air pockets within that foam, the same thing can happen when the air inside or the gas inside, when it cools, there is condensation happening within it. So there is damp able to be within this material. So it's going to degrade its insulation and probably degrade it, and it can break down. So it's the same when you've got wood fiber or a cork or something that can take on moisture. If it's in a very damp area, then it is going to degrade and it can rot. So I've seen a lot of wood fiber that's been wet for a little while that has started to swell and break down, and the same with the wood wool boards, mineral boards. If they're damp, they will swell and break down pretty quickly. So this is a problem with not just the natural materials, but the these chemical modern materials as well. So when you've got a problem with where you've got high ground levels on a solid wall, so externally, possibly a basement, or where your cottage is built into the back of a stone wall, or you've got, for some reason, you've got some high ground levels you can't really deal with, or you've had high ground levels and you reduce them, put a French drain in or something, and there's a lot of damp in that wall. Using an insulating plaster can be really useful. I mean, the insulation they use within that plaster is obviously, it needs to deal with moisture as well. So a hemp, it can do the same thing. A hemp can take on that moisture and rot or expand, just hold on to moisture not very well. Even clays will do the same. So using something like a perlite is the next step up, where it's just heated, expanded rock. So it's much less likely to rot. But then the next stage is the expanded clay beads or balls, because they're basically a brick but with lots of those little air pockets in. So they're really good to use within a plaster as well. And you can get them from any size, basically. So it's a great big 20 mil or bigger, probably, are these expanded clay beads. But you can even get them down.
In a plaster.
Well, you wouldn't put it in a plaster, but maybe a
Was going to
floor.
say.
But you can get them so that they're like 100, about 200 micron. So they're powder. It looks like you're holding flour or a powder, but in actual fact, they're tiny expanded clay balls with tiny, tiny air holes in them. So they make an amazing plaster, but they don't degrade when they're wet because they're heated clay. So they're basically a brick material. And then you've got the expanded glass that you use a lot for
The foam
foam
glass stuff.
glass, for floors. So you can get the foam glass, I think, in really tiny. So mixing that with the plasters is really useful. And again, then you've got your thermal mass because of the binder, well, usually lime. Then you've got your insulation because of the tiny air pockets within these materials. But then it's still working with moisture really well. So it's still, as well as buffering the internal temperatures, it's also buffering moisture levels inside, like what a good breathable plaster does, absorbs really quickly and desorbs. So you're just getting the best of both worlds. They are really useful for areas where there's going to be high levels of moisture. So you've got high ground levels are quite high outside, or because you never really, if you're doing external insulation with fiber boards and things, you never want that touching the ground. So whereas these plasters with materials that can deal with moisture, they can be in contact with the ground much more, so they're not so fragile.
You've talked about making your own there. I mean, I've not played with putting insulation stuff into a plaster, but what I've noticed is that the kind of products where you buy an insulating plaster product, they seem to me to be like a really hard NHL 5, which I don't really want to be using. I don't want to be using NHLs that, certainly not to wrap a whole building in.
No. Firstly, they're horrible to use because they're just, there's no, it's like using cement with no lime in it or no feb, the aerator. So it's just, there's no workability to them. So an NHL 5 is horrific to work with unless you start putting a plasticizer in it or something to make it more workable, some fines or something. But yeah, you just don't need it that hard. And
I'm wondering why, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it does seem like that the sort of products seem to be this very, very hard lime. And I'm wondering if they're doing that, certainly with the hemp. I wonder if it's sort of, I don't know. I'm starting to talk about a thing I don't know about, so maybe I should stop.
well, no, it's I think it's a lot of the time it's belt and braces. It's like, why don't the NHL lime companies make an NHL 0.5 or NHL 1? Because that's kind of where it needs to be for most old buildings, really. That's what's going to work really quite nicely. But yeah, there's some good ones out there. The Martin from Best of Lime, he makes their insulating warm coat is a it's a non-hydraulic lime with perlite in it, and that works really well.
It's a bit like plastering with marshmallow, though, isn't it?
It's weird, definitely.
Do you know what? I did a whole like farmhouse where we were using that. And it's like, I'm a pretty decent plasterer and I didn't know what to do with that stuff. It confused the hell out of me.
Well, actually, it's very different stuff. Using anything where, I mean, and using the same chalk lime with that's got no, or anything that's got a very low amount of sand in it, it's the same. It's like, it's very different to use. But as long as you can get it on and get it to stick.
I was doing a lot of like, I got it on, got it stick, and then just floating it back or scratching it back to get some sort of like level and flatness. I'm sure with a bit of practice, and I know like some other people who are working on that job and they've worked on it longer, they sort of figured out some techniques later on. I'm sure it's a doable thing. It was like that marshmallow whip stuff you get for your sandwiches.
Yeah. Did you do quite thick coats? Okay. I think with a lot of the insulation products, because they have got such a big aggregate in them and they often to be lacking a bit of stickiness, which is when I was making my own, I always struggled with, because I wanted as much, it's trying to get that, trying to fill all the voids with the lime to make it just stick really nicely, but still workable. From some of the first efforts I did, I had so much, so there wasn't enough lime to stick it all together or whatever binder. So it just kind of just fell apart the whole time. And it was just like trying to stick it back to the walls. But yeah, so I mean, that might be as well, that might be kind of why people are looking towards using harder binders, but I don't think it's needed. And the speed, because you're going much thicker, the speed of set, that's what they want. Because even just using a non-hydraulic without chalk or some of these stone dust, it's to really help with the drying time. They can just take so long to dry. So I think that kind of using more of a stronger NHL for that speed of set might be why they're going down that route, but it's really not helping in the long run. And a lot of the time, if you've got a solid wall and you're insulating internally, you really need to keep it working as a solid wall. So if you, for instance, you've got some you panel it out and you put some insulation in the panels and plasterboard or put some boarding on, it's still where you've got that air gap. That because there's a lot of air there in that air gap, and because it's going to change temperature constantly, it's going to have condensation being created. So wherever that air gap is, it needs to be able to deal with moisture. So it's where in my house, the person that lived here before me plasterboarded all the internal walls. They didn't insulate, they just plasterboarded. And whenever we take any plasterboard off, the amount of old growth behind the plasterboard, where that air void is, where there's been a lot of condensation, because it's that pocket of air is heated and then it cools down. So there's this constant heating and cooling and condensation creation. Every time it cools down, it condensates on the back of the plasterboard, and you get a lot of mold growth, which is those spores are going to get back into the living environment. And I mean, some of those spores from molds can lead to sick building syndrome and some really nasty asthma, some really nasty things. So it's trying to eliminate these large air gaps and make the wall work as a solid wall still by putting your insulation right up against the wall, so that when that water vapor moves through the condensation and starts to cool down that the wall behind it can absorb it and deal with it. So having the wall working well, that's and breathing is so important, even before you start insulating. So that those cement renders, those plastic paints externally need to be removed, and moisture needs to be able to escape. So the more you insulate, the more you need to think about allowing that moisture to escape, because it's rather than the condensation on the surface of your internal wall, it's going to be going much deeper and condensating inside after you've insulated. So
do you ever use do you know Ubacus? What? I could tell by your face.
No.
What the frick is Ubacus? So it's a thing that it's a German website. So it's ubakus.com. And I used it in the design of my house. And you can build a wall system up and you can sort of, there's loads of products that you can select. And then you can set the temperature range internally and the temperature range externally and what the sort of average moisture content will be. And then so what it does is it shows you little water droplets when there's going to be a condensation issue. And it will tell you, you know, like, is this a thing that's going to be dealt with, or is this a, like, a problem? Yeah, I don't
know.
That's
brilliant.
I mean, I imagine you must be able to do, like, brick bits. All the materials I've looked for have been in there, even if you do have to, like, hunt for them a bit, because they're a bit sometimes in German. So I did interesting things. Like, I've got this vapor membrane, and I wanted to drop it sort of into the middle of the wall, so it was, like, hidden. And by playing around with different depths of where to put that membrane in the wall, I could see, like, it creates moisture problems, because putting it, like, deeper into the wall so it's, like, less liable to get punctured seemed like the great thing to do, but it created moisture issues. So I was like, all right, okay, well, I'll just have to deal with it at the sort of the top end. But yeah, it's a really, really great thing. And it's a free program. I'm not a salesperson for them or anything. It's a free program. I think there's some weird, like, clause where to make sure that you're not using it for commercial stuff, you're only allowed to use it after 6 p.m.
Because nobody ever works past 6.
No. But I mean, it's definitely, I'll send you the link. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, that sounds really fun.
Yeah, I mean, well, like, geeks interesting. Like us. But and it also tells you, like, how much what your heating delay will be, what the carbon sequestering will be. I'm a big fan. I used Excellent. It. You know, I played with so many different options in this house to get, you know, the optimal. You know, I desperately didn't want to have any kind of dew point issues. Mm. So yeah.
Well, because that's it. You're always going to have. Not necessarily dew point issues, but you're always going to have a dew point. Whereas that, because they're always going to have moisture moving through the wall, because those pressure differentials, moisture generally is getting driven into the walls to the outside. And just as it cools down, it is going to condensate. So it's like a lot of the timber frame. I'm not sure if it's still the same, but when I was, do my MSc, we were going through for a timber frame building that there was an internal and external vapor membrane sandwiching the insulation, and the internal vapor membrane was 5 times more resistant to moisture than the external, so it would be allowing moisture to go into the internal membrane much 5 times slower than it was able to escape on the external. So I'm not sure if you've got two membranes that you're working with on your home or.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey there, I'm Mick from the Mick and Pat Show.
That's right, and I'm Pat.
Looking for a podcast that's like catching up with old friends? Well, you're in luck.
We're here to bring you weekly doses of lifestyle commentary, discuss culture and politics, and top it off with the occasional beer and film reviews.
But it's not just about us. We're a community. Our listeners are our kin, and we let you all have a say in what we discuss.
So saddle up and join the conversation at the Mick and Pat Show. You can check out our website or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
I do, yes. I'm using the, you know, the ProClimber system, so that's all. It's all figured out.
Yeah.
So I assume that's what's happening in this system.
Well, I'm not sure. This was quite a long time ago. So I think it was probably a belt and braces attempt to stop moisture being stuck into the wall and causing rot. But because ideally your internal surface, you want it to be as absorbent as possible to deal with those that surface condensation. But if you've got if those walls are fairly warm and not cold and cold bridging, then you aren't going to get that same level of condensation, which is the problem we get with these solid walls. So,
well, I'll show you. So my ceiling and one entire wall is this stuff internally. And that's a great moisture buffer.
And that's the cork.
That is the cork, facade grade cork. So I've wrapped 3/4 of the building outside with that, so to cover all my cold bridges.
Yes.
And then internally, all the ceilings and sort of half of one of the walls.
Yeah, I really liked when you've got the join between the timber and the cork. externally, it's looking very, very tidy.
Well, internally, I've got the same thing because I wanted all the my cold bridges to be covered. So externally, where there's timber, there is internal cork, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, reversed.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've nerded out for such a long time about this. I just want to live in my house.
Yeah.
I'm fed up of nerding out now. Anyway, that's a massive tangent. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So I'm going to talk lofts. I think lofts is probably the first thing that people should insulate once they've sorted out some drafting issues.
Yes.
But I mean, what materials would you suggest as a loft insulation? Let's say, so first of all, let's say you're just insulating like the ceiling.
So then you've got it's a cold roof.
Exactly.
Which means that you've got a cold roof space, or your attic is not insulated. So you don't need to insulate the roof because you're just insulating above the ceiling, so that your attic space is still ventilated and cold. So usually you've got a lot more scope you've got more space to insulate. So using with our a sheep's wool would be really good. I mean, that just allows vapor to escape really easily. You've got plenty of space, so it doesn't need to be such a high U value because you've got plenty of space. So that's kind of the easiest one to go for. Maybe, I mean, some of the foam insulation, we've talked about it not having the thermal mass, so sometimes not dealing particularly well with overheating, and being able to store that heat. But also how you fit it is really important as well, because a lot of these insulation materials that come as kind of solid boards, a lot of them you can't really, I've seen some of the thermal wood fiber boards have like a tongue and groove that you can fit together to stop that draft. So a lot of the times when you use some of these boards, there's gaps between them. So the insulation level is great, but there's still a lot of drafts. So using something like a sheep's wool, where it actually deals with drafts really nicely, and you can pack it into all those little gaps. So that I'd probably go using that. That's it. And using a combination can be quite useful as well. So if you've got your rafters, between your rafters with a sheep's wool or something, and then maybe over the top of the rafters, you could use some of the fiber boards or a closed cell insulation.
No, we're just going to use wood. No closed cell.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like I'm going to say that we are only going to recommend the best.
I think, and actually, when you look at the best forms of insulation now, I think some of the better ones are still open cell. I mean, I don't really know much about them, but the Aeros, which is supposed to be the best insulation there is still open cell and allows water vapor to move through it. One of my clients was talking, we repointed the outside of their house, and he wanted to insulate the inside. And we were looking at some of the Aero gel.
It's a NASA thing, isn't it?
NASA developed it, yeah.
For the space yes. shuttles.
So yeah. It's a silica gel kind of soaked or carried by fibers. So it looks a little bit like recycled fabric, or the recycled cotton you can get. And then it's got a board you can plaster on the outside. It almost looks like an aqua board, like a cement mineral board on the surface. But you just use like an expanding foam spray on your wall to stick this kind of fibrous stuff to it. So it just looks, so you have still got an air gap, and I'm not sure how well, because it's introducing an air gap on the cold side of the insulation and between the solid wall that's going to be cold, there is going to be condensation there, and how that deals with moisture and how that affects the U value, I'm not sure. So actually using these materials that deal with moisture better, you're not going to have these issues. And if there are any high levels of condensation at some point, then at least it can absorb it and release it and not cause issues. So I'm almost always looking towards using these kind of more natural materials because they can deal with moisture better and release it better. A friend of mine recently did a loft conversion and spent quite a lot of money kitting it out. And he put Celotex insulation carried within the new kind of, they built a stud framework inside the loft area so they could really fit it with quite a lot of Celotex. And then in the eaves, they put some storage, but then stopped the insulation. And he actually thought he had a roof leak because the amount of condensation that was occurring on the back of the Celotex, it was so much that water was pouring and running down the sides as if it was just, it was really interesting to see how much moisture can be created just from that condensation. And because it was literally pouring, he was putting buckets at the end of the Celotex to try and catch this water that was just being produced suddenly that wasn't noticeable before. But as soon as it got insulated and it was concentrated at those areas, that it just really started to go. And it's again, when, like we were saying with the cold bridging in your walls, I mean, you might not notice it because the whole wall is dealing with a certain level of condensation, but then you insulate and there might be one either cement lintel or whatever in the wall that's creating that cold bridge, suddenly all that amount of condensation is focused on that one area, and then that actually becomes quite significant. It was quite interesting to go and see that it was basically raining inside his house.
I had a friend of mine on the boats. He spent such a long time insulating his boat with just sort of Celotexy foam stuff. And then, you know, as soon as it got cold, he had that same, you know, he said it was raining inside. It was, and he was so like beaten by it. So he pulled it all out and then had to make sure everything was like really stuck to the, you know, he had to make sure there was absolutely no gap for that condensation to form. I mean, boats is a whole different thing
because it's a metal shell.
I just don't really think people should be living in metal boxes. But anyway, that's a completely different rant. One thing I did want to say, and this came up for me over the summer, is like, it's really important. You sort of touched on it then, like it's really important how the insulation is installed as well. So I did this video and I was trying to like, I thought I'd use this, my build to like make some instructional videos, you know, to see if I could educate people a little bit about how you can build a bit better. And it stopped almost immediately because I did one video where I showed like, this is how you cut sheep's wool insulation. You put a board down on it, you compress it nice and tight, and then you like you run a knife down, and that gives you a nice crisp cut with like 90 degree angles, and then it fits in with no gaps.
Yeah.
And the amount of comments I got from people, you know, and I said, why you want to do this? Because otherwise, you know, you get gaps and condensation. And loads of people just said, oh, no, I just rip it. It's like, well, if you rip it, all that insulation is specifically designed and tested to get the right density so that, you know, you're getting optimum performance. If you're ripping it, like you're, some areas you'll like rip out a little corner and, you know, then you don't have the density. And then, you know, I got so many comments from people saying, like one person said, no, we just rip it. Oh, yeah. And they were like a building company. And I looked at their website, and the first image on their website was them screwing down some board over the top of some sheep's wool insulation. And they had a little, it was a sort of header box, I suppose, on top of a wall.
Okay.
And you could see the sheep's wool insulation that had just been folded in. And like, you know, you could see the gaps, and they were like, you know, the photo was them screwing boards on over the top. So it wasn't like that was in progress. That was their finished insulation product. And I was like, oh God, I can't deal with getting comments from people telling me I'm wrong when like that is their standard of work. And so I didn't do any more how-to videos. Oh, no. And that was the end of it. I couldn't deal with sorting my own project out and sorting everyone else's out, which is, you know, not the right way to do things, but, you know, maybe they'll listen to this.
Well, that's the problem with a lot of the kind of modern Celotex boards being installed, that they, a lot of the time, it is difficult to get them in, and they're, a lot of the time they're... Mm. They're really rushed, and when you're trying to fit them in between either some rafters, or when you're trying to fit them between studs that you've put up against a solid wall, that seems to happen a lot. Just watch George Clark, and they're never cut particularly well, and they're difficult to cut to get, because you're the stud work that's put in is never particularly perfect. So it's, I mean, I hate putting anything like that in, and I hate plasterboard in, because we're being dyslexic and then trying to measure random sizes of plasterboard that every side is slightly different, and I just, yeah, it melts my mind. but they're never going to be installed particularly well, so
yeah.
So that's sort of, I mean, there's, you can get some of these tapes and things, but it's just that always you might have a really good U value, but the way it's installed and the draft or the gaps are even more important than the level of U value. So that's why when we were talking about doing the loft spaces and having something that was like a sheep's wool, where you can kind of overlap it and sort of counterbatten style it, and then actually fit it into a lot of these edges, to even though you might be packing it in and squeezing it, so reducing its U value, because you're squashing, like you were saying, it's squashing those air pockets, so reducing the amount of the insulation, the U value, but you can fill those gaps and stop those drafts quite nicely. And then on the other side, using kind of lime to help fill those gaps as well. It's so it's the definitely kind of, it's looking at where you've got draft issues and just going around your house on a windy day. I mean, I was sitting up, it was only kind of a couple of weeks ago, I think I was feeling a bit rough. I had a cold. I thought, I'm going to go and read up in the bedroom, and our bed, the headboard is back to a window, a modern, unfortunately, window that's been fitted in. And I haven't got much hair. And I instantly felt, it wasn't particularly windy, but it's like, I am freezing. It's like, I can feel wind. And then I put in my hand up around kind of the window, and just the bottom corners of the window reveals, I could just, the wind was just blowing straight through from one side to the other. So I need to pull the plasterboard off and see what's there, but it's probably not going to be a lot there as well. And then, so, and that corresponded perfectly with, because it was so cold because of this draft, mold growth is happening on those, by the window in those bottom corners.
Yeah.
So actually it can be really easy just on a windy day to go around and find out where you've got little drafts. And that can be some of the biggest wins you can get with stopping heat loss.
Yes. Well, we were going to talk about that, weren't we? Sort of like the order of business. You know, I think you can't overlook sticking, like, if you've got a leaky front door with a, you know, that's not particularly airtight, sticking a big old curtain over it, like one that touches the ground and, you know, goes all around the side, that, the sort of quickest, cheapest way to have a big energy efficiency win. And yeah, and obviously all this stuff, like energy prices are just going through the roof at the minute, so if you can spend 50 quid, I don't know, probably not even that, on a big thick curtain and a curtain rail, yeah, I think you would save that back rapidly at the moment. You know, that's obviously sort of fixing the symptom. If you can go straight to the source and, you know, stop your leaky front door. But as you say, like going around on a windy day, like I shaved my face for Movember just when I was doing the air tightness in my house. And it was fantastic. Like I could feel everything on my face. And I was like, just sort of pointing my chin into little corners and being like, oh yeah, that needs a bit of air tightness in, doesn't it? It's so simple. And yeah, if you want to do it a bit more scientifically, you could do a blow a door test and then sort of wander around with a little smoke pen. But yeah, for the sort of average homeowner, just sort of, you know, sealing up those gaps around the windows.
And that's what we find a lot, is because especially with the old buildings where they've had PVC windows put in, or kind of more modern windows put in, where they've just, I mean, the amount of places, because I'm doing so much plastering and rendering, the amount of places we see where literally they are just stuck in with expanding foam, sometimes not even any screws. They're kind of wedged with a couple of, like, there might be the odd wooden wedge just to kind of hold it in place for the time being, whack the spray foam in, done.
Oh, that's,
and then
awful.
Cement renders on the outside, and the cement, the foam, literally give it a year or two, especially in the presence of moisture, it crumbles and it's just dust. So then that's where you're getting a lot of air leakage around windows and doors, and which is why solid plastering is so kind of useful. So if you can do some lime plastering around your reveals and the heads of the windows, that you can just pack a really nice fibrous mix in there, so there's lots of fiber so it won't shrink, just to deal, just to stop this air loss, and just plaster up those and fill those gaps with the lime could be really useful.
Do you know what I might be saying something that might offend you a little bit here, but I would actually now, I would go to the, what do they call it? Like air tightness, sort of a beading.
Okay.
So you can stick it to the window and then plaster on top of it. And the plaster sticks, is like, there's little holes in the beading. And that, because
yes,
I think there's always going to be a little bit of shrinking and over time in any sort of plaster mix. If you can like actually adhere the plaster to the tape, which is adhered to the window, you have got an airtight seal. And I think that's one of those occasions for me where using a little bit of plastic, you know, I would never advocate for using plastic in a building unless like it had a real specific purpose.
Yeah, I think there's, but yeah, it's you're always going to have that shrinkage and those different rates. So having something that is connected to the window is useful. So yeah, I might look more into that. And actually, like the hemp and, like, you know, the ship building materials, like the
oakum.
Oakum and burnt sand mastic.
What oakum is, like, is it pitch pine and hemp fibers or something like that?
Yeah, I think sometimes maybe like a natural bitumen as well. But that's something similar that can move. But having, like you say, having something attached to the window and then within the plaster as well, that is just going to stop any air gaps. But
yeah, I mean, like, I'm sort of finding this interesting line in my own work where, you know, I think using natural material is really important, and I think getting the most efficient building possible is really important. And, you know, where do the compromises on either of those sort of sit? To make, you know, the healthiest possible, you know, for the environment, for, you know, climate, for the occupant. Yeah, it's a constantly evolving thing. And I've, you know, stupidly said it on a podcast now, and it'll change in 6 months and I'll have moved my thinking slightly. But
well, we're all constantly learning and trying new things and seeing what happens and seeing the effects of that. So I think it's, everyone's always always learning. Which is why having the training centres been so much fun for me, because I'm able to try the things out that I'd never be able to try on somebody else's home. And so I've learned so much from having the training centre and having students come on that sometimes they're homeowners, but we've had a lot of conservation officers, architects and specifiers and structural engineers come on, and I'm learning so much from them. And actually just that the pooling of information and speaking to you as well, just the pooling of information is so important, because I was kind of just working on my own for so long. I was definitely felt quite isolated from the industry because I was just plodding along doing my thing.
Yeah. Especially when like any builder you meet is, you know, generally they will not have any clue about what we're talking about. You know, you're sort of, you know, down Dewson's, builder, it's like, what, you know, air tightness, vapor permeability, these are terms which aren't sort of in the mainstream.
No.
So to feel, you can feel really isolated.
Definitely, yeah. So it's been really nice, and it's again because I'm not an expert in insulation and using it. I do use it in my work, but it's nice having this insulation month where we can just get much more information coming from other people. It's just going to just speed up everyone's learning and understanding about it. But I think we seem to be always just coming back to using materials that have just got these three elements where they can be breathable, have the capacity to take on moisture, hold it and release it. And also exactly the same with heat, and then still have this U value. It's just having those three things, that's what's needed, not just for like your build as well, not just for retrofitting, but for new builds as well, where they're just, you've just got all these elements. So the way we rate our buildings is completely useless. We're just rating them in U value, sometimes air tightness, but probably not particularly. And it's how solid walls have got a really bad press with their ratings, because they're tested just for U value. And I think who's to say a lot of these testings that were done on solid walls, whether they were done on a solid wall that was working well and breathing and dealing with moisture, or whether the solid walls, the testing was done on something that was damp or had cement renders. I mean, who knows? The SPAB have been doing a lot of good work actually looking at the performance of a well-working solid wall and how much better it is in terms of heat loss than how it's rated. So it's not the most important sort of thing for us to think about. Is it's just not all about U value.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I just had a friend of mine said, I'm going to build a sauna. What insulation should I use? And I said, whatever you do, don't use Solatex, Kingspan, something like that. It releases cyanide gas. I'm pretty sure I'm right in this. It's like when it's heated, it releases cyanide gas. It's like, that is not a thing you want in your sauna. And so use something inert. Like if you have to use something cheap, use like a rock wall or something like that. At least it's, yeah, it's not going
to
be
possible. And allowing moisture to escape again as well, rather than just trapping it.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wondered, I didn't know if a sauna, you'd actually want to use a natural, like something that could biodegrade. I wasn't sure about that. And on the one hand, it's like, you know, you have a high humidity moment when the sauna is being used and then nothing. So the material should be able to absorb it and then let it go. I was slightly concerned about it breaking down.
Well, with the Solatex behind it, it's definitely going to be just trapping that. That timber is just going to build up and just keep getting wetter and wetter. And then you're definitely going to start to get some rot.
Yeah. Well, so a few months later, he sent me a message saying, this is what I bought. And it's Solatex that's been promoted as four saunas. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, you know, don't believe the hype. Don't. Just because something says it's, you know, the right material. I mean, it's hard, and I've spoken about this a lot on the podcast. It's really hard for homeowners to see through what is greenwashing and what is, you know, them just telling you
exactly
what you want to hear. Because this guy was looking for sauna insulation. He saw a product that said sauna insulation. I was like, well, that's the one. But, you know, he's created a little poison box. And of course, you know, that the where the insulation's probably most important is around his heat source. He's got, a little wood burner in there with a, you know, some sort of hot rocks to pour water on. And I think Celotex, is it 300 degrees?
Okay.
It starts to melt. And it's like, you know, a wood stove could easily get to 300 degrees.
I mean, there's a massive range. You've got such high temperatures. And that's what causes that internal condensation problem is the when you've got such differing temperatures internally to externally, the higher that difference is, the more condensation you're going to get within the building. And that condensation's, I mean, a lot of it's going to be trapped by the Celotex and not be able to condensate so much on the outside. So that I'd really be worried about the damp in that timber. And if you did use even a wood fiber that might not actually deal with moisture particularly well, just the fact that even if there's a lot of condensation that happens within it, at least it can escape and be able to dry. So which is not the fact with anything that's kind of trapping moisture, anything with foil on it.
Anyway, we'll keep talking about doing it the right way, and then hopefully the rest of the world is going to catch up. But I wanted to finish on just how can people get involved in Insulation Month?
So you can go to our website at carringtonlime.co.uk. We're also going to be doing a practical insulation, you're putting some wood fiber, fixing wood fiber onto walls and then plastering them to get a nice finish with some different materials. On the website, and I think on the 11th of February, Cornish, Adam from Cornish Lime is going to be doing a CPD, and we're trying to get a few more people doing some.
Is that online?
Yes. Yes. And we're going to have some where people can actually come to the training center. And we've got one, a damping old buildings talk, next Saturday at the unit as well. Not sure what date it is, but everything's on the website.
Just check out your website. Nice. Many, many thanks to Ben for that lovely long chat. It's a good old time. Two builders swapping stories. As he said, head on over to Carrington Lime to get involved with their Insulation Month. That is in February 2022. Ben will be in the Building Sustainability Community Facebook group answering any questions that you have about this episode. So do get involved with that. If you're not part of that group already, search for Building Sustainability Community in Facebook to find us and join the conversation. And just time to say before I go, a massive thanks to all those people that have been sharing the podcast. I see a little jump in downloads every time you do it. So thank you so much. And a big shout out to Jo Hills, who told the good people of Twitter that she's taken up running just to make time to listen to this podcast. So well done, Jo. I hope you had a good run. Have yourself a nice rest. Until next time, see you. Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.